chillin', Anna. You were here about the eliminating of the negative and an accent on a positive.
Gather round me, chillin', if you're willing, and sit tight while I start reviewing.
Test. Is this thing on? Oh, yes, it is. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, The Joyful Frugalista. And now here's your host, Serena Bird and friends.
Hello, Frugalistas, and welcome. Today I have a very special guest. I'm especially pleased to have him on because I've been trying to track him down for months. I seriously have, Brandon. Yeah. You can laugh at that if you like, but
no,
I have.
We were emailing way back when we were trying to organise that fire screening.
That's right, the Canberra screening of Playing With Fire. Mm. But I was trying to track you down for weeks before then because you're a hard man to contact.
Oh.
And you are a star in this household. My husband Neil loves your YouTube clips so much. While I'm holed up in my room tapping out blog posts, he is watching your YouTube's videos. He is. And then I come out and he goes, oh, you've got to watch this Brandon. Brandon's really cool. Brandon has, oh, you've just got to watch this. He just totally nails it. It's just so clear now.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you. It's totally revolutionized. Let me introduce who Brandon is. Brandon is from the YouTube channel Aussie Wealth Creation, and he's also co-founder of Profitful. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. I actually want to start by asking something that might appear to many of our listeners to be quite random.
Yeah.
Let's talk about knitting.
Okay. Well, I've made two scarves in my lifetime.
Two scarves in your lifetime.
Do you knit yourself?
I do actually knit myself. Right. But it's not so much the knitting, it's the knitting patterns.
Yeah, that's true. That's gone back a long time now. That was probably when I was back in year 10 or something, maybe a little bit later than that. I don't know. I just remember this is my, for people that don't understand the context, this is something I spoke about in one of my YouTube videos a very long time ago about generating passive income. And this is my first way. This is kind of what opened my mind up to passive income, is that my mum, she loves knitting, and she came home one day and she said, oh, you know, one of my friends at work, she makes these knitting grid patterns,
mm-hmm.
and she just sells them on this website that I don't even think exists anymore. It was called Craftsy. I think it's like Etsy, but more for the knitting craft kind of stuff. She's saying, yeah, and she gets an email every couple of hours saying that someone's bought her knitting pattern. And I was like, that's kind of smart because she only has to make that knitting pattern once.
Mm.
And then she can just get sales after, like, just continuously after that. My mum kind of said, I feel like that's something you could do with your knowledge of Photoshop and whatever. So I actually gave it a crack. So I was like, that'd be genius. And if I could start to get consistent sales, and then I realized that you can only sell knitting grids for about $1, regardless of how special they are, how amazing they are. I gave it a crack anyway, and it didn't make me any money whatsoever, really. Probably less than $10 overall. It just opened my eyes up to the passive income model, I suppose. And then I kind of just got obsessed with the idea of passive income, just thought of different ways to start to generate more of it.
Well, I'm a bit sad that your knitting career ended there because I actually, when I was growing up, I always, in a way, dreamed of being a textile designer. My mum was a fashion designer.
Yeah.
And there's a period of time where I actually did become very interested about knitting patterns and so forth. And I've watched with interest about how there's a whole lot of online communities and different groups that are embracing knitting again. I'm very sad that your earlier designs didn't take
short-lived,
off.
Short-lived, yeah.
Short-lived. But obviously it sounds like that was what got you into passive income. Mm. So why is creating passive income so important?
Well, for me, the way I think about it is passive income basically equals retirement. If you can generate income without really having to work for it or work very hard for it, then if you generate enough, then you can just sit back and just let it kind of roll in. I always just keep that at the back of my mind. People say, oh, no, retirement's, 65, it's when you can access super or whatever. But the way I think about it is just if you've got enough, I mean, retirement is really when you live your life without working. The way I view it is that if you can generate enough income without having to work, then that's basically retirement. If you can find any sort of way of doing that, whether it be selling knitting grids or, in my case, like making a YouTube channel or making t-shirt designs is another one that I've done before. if you can start to really build some of these passive income streams, then you can kind of accelerate your way to financial freedom and have to work less and less over time.
Talking about work, you've had rather a change in your work circumstances earlier this year.
Yeah, for people that don't know me, I have been a physiotherapist for 3 years. And at about the same time that I started my physio career, I started doing my YouTube channel because I kind of had this second passion after I kind of learned about passive income. I kind of learned about the stock market. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting stuff. So I started learning about the stock market, made some beginner's mistakes, classic kind of stuff. And then I started this YouTube channel and I just kept going with this YouTube channel, making 2 videos a week for the past 3 years. And super grateful that over time people have enjoyed the content, have subscribed and kept watching. And it's kind of just grown steadily over time. I think last year, 2019, was a particularly good year for growth of the channel. So much so that I could see that not so much the dollars, but the growth rate was of new subscribers and views and that sort of thing was far exceeding the growth that I was seeing in my career, even though I really enjoyed being a physio. I kind of just took a bit of a stab and said, you know what, I'd probably kick myself if I didn't at least give it a try. So I gave it a go and I'm doing YouTube full time and haven't looked back.
Fabulous. So in terms of growth, how are you at the moment with stats?
Stats for YouTube. So YouTube, I'm currently at about gaining an extra 5,000 or so subscribers each month now. But if we kind of go back in time, in the first year that I was doing YouTube, it was maybe a couple of hundred subscribers a month. And last year, it maybe started out at maybe an extra 1,000 subscribers per month. And then it slowly grew to 2,000. Now it's up to kind of 5,000. You can definitely see that algorithm kind of taking over and helping snowball the channel a little bit. And the way I see it is that if you just look at any kind of job in Australia, just typical wage growth is around about 3% per year. So
if you're lucky.
So it's just slow going. Whereas YouTube, you're just seeing that kind of more exponential curve, which is really what I want to try and tap into as best I can.
Inspired by you, I started my own YouTube channel a couple of weeks
Congratulations.
Ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And thanks to you subscribing just 5 minutes ago, I now have a total of 10 subscribers.
That's all right.
In the vocab of my young boys who are big computer nerds, I'm a real noob at this.
Noob, that's okay. I was a noob once. Everyone's got to start somewhere. I had 0 subscribers at one point.
Well, I guess everyone does when you start
exactly.
a new YouTube channel. So what advice do you have for noobs like me?
I think probably the biggest piece of advice would to be try and maintain some consistency in uploads. I think that the algorithm really likes people that take it seriously and are quite consistent with their uploading. And particularly now when the other thing to consider, the way that the YouTube algorithm is kind of structured, is that when you start and you have no subscribers, you don't have a regular following that's clicking on your videos just because they see that you've uploaded something. You really have to try and capture people with the title and the thumbnail, because at the start, that's the only way that people will see your videos, is when it gets recommended to them because they've watched another video by someone else. This is where people drift into the idea of clickbait, and I really don't like the idea of clickbait. Clickbait's basically where you just make your title and thumbnail so outrageous that you're just trying to bait people into clicking on it.
I must admit that I'm a real sucker for clickbait.
Yeah, everyone is.
You never believe what is in this photo. They never notice.
Click, yeah. And then it's just the worst video you've ever seen ever, and it's just like, oh, I feel so annoyed that I clicked on that. but, like, I still think that there's clickbait, which I think is pushing people way too far, and I don't think you should do that. It's not a good long-term strategy, but you can definitely make intriguing titles and thumbnails based on what the video is actually about. Mm. So if you made a video about passive income, you could still make a title that says something like simple passive income ideas for 2020 or something like that. And that's not lying to anyone, but it's still intriguing enough for people to want to explore what that content is further. Yeah.
No, thank you for that. And we've really enjoyed a lot of your recent YouTube
clips
in this current crisis.
Mm.
Particularly, actually, your one about the herd mentality.
Mm.
Perhaps could you talk a little bit more about your thoughts about this panic buying, both in terms
of
supermarkets and the stock market? Like, what's driving it and what are
It's interesting. I guess I knew that I would see panic in the stock market. I just that's always the way it happens, is that when the stock market goes down, there are so many investors that are so short-term focused, they can't see the bigger picture, the long-term. I always knew that I would see the panic selling in the stock market, but I had no idea that I would see it in reality, in real life. Like when I find it just ridiculous that you go to the supermarkets and you can't, there's literally no toilet paper, there's barely any pasta or anything like that. But I guess just because I've looked back at previous stock market crashes, particularly the kind of 08, 09 financial crisis, that I knew that there would be heaps of panic in the stock market. If there was some catalyst that was big enough, you know, the first layer of selling just triggers the fear of the next layer, which then they sell, which triggers the fear of the next layer when they sell. And yeah, it's a horrible trap to get caught up into. And that's why I try not to look at the short term of the stock market. I always kind of think about buying stocks for 10, 15, 20 years. Yeah.
And is that your strategy for going forward? Do you feel that there is going to be a recession or even a depression? And if so, how are you strategically situating yourself for that?
Yeah, I have no idea if it will turn into something bigger. I always try and say that on my channel, is that yes, this market's gone down by 30% or whatever, but I've got really no idea what will happen next. I feel like this, just my personal opinion, this could have like the potential of triggering us into a full-blown recession just by the fact that the government is shutting down business both here and internationally. Like it is an actual business shutdown, which obviously causes revenues of these companies to drop dramatically because they're not producing or selling products, and that'll lead to job losses and higher unemployment. That's kind of the stuff that can trigger that recession kind of stuff. Yeah, I guess the strategies that I employ when I'm thinking about my own investing is really just to maintain that long-term mindset. I think that's the biggest thing that you can focus on, is if you're going to buy something, just think about, would I be comfortable holding it for the next 10 to 15 to 20 years? I think if you can maintain that sort of mentality, then you can see through the short-term panic much, much more clearly. So that'd be the biggest thing. I think the other thing to think about when you're going into stock market investing is just to really have a good understanding of what you're trying to do, what you're trying to get out of stock market investing before you invest. Because at the moment, the market's gone down, a lot of people are just going, oh, I need to buy something because the market has gone down by 30%.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably just tell those people just to chill out and just think about, what are you trying to do? Are you going to try and research individual businesses that you'd like to invest in and hold for 10, 15, 20 years? Or are you someone that's going to just buy diversified across the whole market, like an ETF or an index fund, those kind of things, and just consistently contribute to your portfolio over time? So I think just having that idea of what your strategy is before you enter the market, that plus long-term thinking, is probably the biggest things that I'm doing to make sure that I can get through this okay on the other side.
It is a scary time, and I do agree that it is an opportunity for a lot of investors. I myself am really trying to focus on abundance thinking rather than scarcity mindset, because I think it's really the scarcity mindset that's spooking everyone.
Mm.
At the end of the day, it's still the same amount of money that's in the economy. I try and mentally think of this period of shutdown like going into Christmas. I know that sounds bizarre, but it's like, yay, I'm off work for a couple of weeks. Like, you know, to try and think of it in a positive way.
Yeah, an opportunity.
It doesn't always work. Like, I guess emotionally I'm up and down like a lot of people are, and my kids are really stressed, and, you know, I worry about my husband, Neil, who has been directed that he still has to be physically at work, and that's stressful. But I just sort of go, well, if I was just approaching Christmas and I wasn't at work for a couple of weeks, I'd be feeling a certain way.
Yeah.
So let's just kind of flip it a little bit. But I guess the challenge for this current economic situation is that sadly a lot of these companies are not necessarily going to make it through. Like, some are, but some aren't.
Yeah.
Does that change your thinking about what you're investing in at all?
Yeah, I think that definitely some companies that haven't set themselves up well are going to really struggle and could potentially fall over. For me, I am in part that passive investor, and so I just track the market. I buy diversified, like track a big index, like say an ASX 200 or an S&P 500, and I just follow that over time. That's always part of my portfolio, just to kind of like as a bit of a cushion to make sure that I'm still set up for the long term if, say, my individual stock selection doesn't work out for me. I think when you're looking at individual companies, you can dive into the financials and try and get a better grasp of whether they are likely to go bankrupt. For instance, if they've taken on a lot of debt, then that's obviously something that can come and bite you in the butt as a company. if you're not profitable as a company leading into a big crash or recession like this, then that's a big worrying sign, because if you've been taking on debt just to keep your company going and then you're also not profitable yet, then that's a bit of a negative combo. Things like that, I look at the cash flows of the company just to make sure the cash flows are healthy leading into the issue. I look at the debts just to make sure that they don't have any massive payments due. It's those sort of things as well. And another thing is looking at the actual physical amount of cash that they have on their balance sheet. So that short-term investments and cash and that sort of stuff. Because if they are hit with a couple of quarters where they don't make any money, then you want to make sure that they've still got a cushion that they can maybe eat into their cash, like what we would have as an emergency fund. You know, if we lost our job all of a sudden, then we'd have maybe a couple of months worth of savings in the bank just that we could eat into.
You would hope. Not many people do.
Unfortunately, not many people do, but you would hope that, you have some sort of emergency fund. So it's that kind of thinking that helps me kind of see a little bit more clearly. But, I mean, it is quite unpredictable.
It is quite unpredictable.
Yeah.
And I think you touched on something really important, which is to actually look at the underlying financials of a company
you're
investing in. I must say, I don't always do this. Sometimes I'm a bit slack.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes those financial documents, they seem quite daunting.
Yeah, it's hard.
It is hard. And I think, too, they're always produced in different ways.
Yeah.
There's no real consistency of approach, even though that sometimes some accountants like to think there is consistency of approach. There isn't. But I really like your focus that you've just outlined in terms of looking particularly at the amount of debt that they've taken on.
Yep.
As a key indicator.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that point. It's quite difficult to get started. When you first look at a balance sheet or a cash flow statement or whatever, it seriously just seems like another language. But the one thing that is kind of nice is that when you look at an income statement or a balance sheet or a cash flow statement, the actual financial documents, they are more or less the same. It's usually the preamble before or after that can kind of really get switched up and can be different depending on like where, like in Australia, there's quite a bit of difference. But in America, because they've got really tight kind of SEC regulations on their reporting, that seems to be a little bit easier to understand the America or read through the American company's annual reports, which is what I mostly do anyway.
It seems like from watching your YouTube clips and hearing you talk now that you're very inspired by Warren Buffett.
Yep, definitely. Oh, he's just super rational. Like all of the points that he makes make sense to me. Like all that I've said about staying focused on the long term and looking at market downturns as a period of opportunity, if you've got a long term mindset, that's basically just Warren Buffett thinking. I'm basically just regurgitating what Warren Buffett has said recently in his like CNBC interviews and that sort of stuff. But yeah, Warren Buffett is definitely the master of the super rational investing, long-term focused investing. And that's why he's been so successful, is because he's super rational and he focuses on the long-term. That's basically the two reasons that he has outperformed everyone else by a lot.
Super rational sounds easy, but the fact is that most people are not rational when it comes
that's
to
true.
Investing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fear involved, a lot of fear about loss.
Yeah.
There's a lot of greed too, like when a market's going up, like everyone starts to talk around the barbecues about investing. My golden rule of thumb is once people start talking to you about, oh yeah, so-and-so is making a fortune on the share market, that's usually when I sell.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. No, that's totally true. I think the important thing is to realize that because we're human, we always feel emotions. Like you can't not feel fear or feel greed in different market conditions. But it's just the idea that the best investors feel the emotions, but they don't act on their emotions, whereas the weaker investors feel the emotions and act on them. That's the thing that you've really got to try and take a step back. And while you're feeling fear or you're feeling greed, try and take a step back and say, okay, I understand that. But I'm not going to let these emotions dictate what actions that I perform when I'm stock market investing.
The next question comes from my lovely friend Erna, aka at Simply Cheeky, who is one of your hugest fans. She was the one who told me about your YouTube channel.
Oh, cool.
And thus got my Neil hooked on a very good way. We are both learning so much from your YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to ask, if you had $5,000, where would you invest?
Oh, that's hard. I usually don't answer these sort of questions because it kind of gets construed as financial advice, I suppose. But I think the first things first is you want to understand what sort of investor you want to be. So if you've got $5,000, say, lying around, then you want to think, okay, am I interested in individual stock selection? Do I want to take the time to look at individual businesses? And to be honest, most people don't want to do that. They know that they should be investing because investing is the key to long-term wealth, which it is, but they open up an annual report and they read about half a page and they go, holy moly.
Well, if you've never invested before, it's very daunting stuff.
It's very daunting. It's complicated and it takes time. And, you know, those reports are very long and one of the biggest rules of investing is you have to understand what you're investing in. So for a lot of people just, they're working full time. They've only got like a couple hours on the weekend to devote to learning about this. So
if they do spend that time, people want to do other things on their weekend.
Exactly right. So for a lot of people, they think, oh, I need to start investing in some businesses. But then at the end of the day, they're like, oh, actually, it's just not for me. But they still want to invest because investing is obviously so powerful for generating long-term wealth. So in a lot of cases, and this is what I tell a lot of people that are new to investing, just getting started, have a bit of money, maybe that they've saved up, they want to get into the market, is that passive investing approach is a long-term investing strategy. It works. And it's, although I'll say it is simple. It's not easy because it takes a lot of discipline, but it is simple in its approach. The approach is basically you find a market tracking investment, like say an ETF, which just tracks a major index like the ASX 200 or the S&P 500. And then you just start investing in that market tracking investment slowly. That's called dollar cost averaging. You come back every 6 months and you just invest a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then over time, because those investments, their objective is to track the performance of the market, whether it's the Australian market or the US market or whatever. Overall, that can just be a super simple way of getting started. And historically, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but historically, the market in Australia or over in the US returns at roughly 7% annually. And that's a very long-term average over like 50, 60, 70 years in the US and more than 100 years here in Australia. For a lot of people that just want to get started, maybe have a couple of $1,000 lying around, that's usually what I say. Well, have you considered just tracking the market over time? Because all you have to do is find an investment that tracks the market and you have to filter your money into that investment slowly over time and just keep showing up, keep doing it. That's why it's difficult and it takes discipline, is because you have to keep showing up year after year and continually contributing to that investment. Yeah, that's probably how I'd say for anyone that's new, maybe has a couple of $1,000 lying around and wants to get started, but isn't really sure where to start.
That sounds like good advice. Mm. Well, not that we're in the business of giving financial advice. No advice on anyone's particular
ideas.
there's some ideas. And I think you raised a really important point, which is that everyone has a different risk profile.
Yeah.
Like when I was suddenly single with two young kids, I was very risk averse. So my investing strategy at that time was to pay down the mortgage. So if I had a buffer, if I couldn't work for any reason. Now, that doesn't sound like a particularly sophisticated approach.
Yeah.
But at that time when I had two mouths to feed and I was under a lot of stress and things were uncertain, that was my approach. Now that I've remarried someone who has a very stable job, we are now in a different financial situation because we're approaching retirement. Mm-hmm. We've got a good retirement plan. So awesome. Now we can afford to be a little bit more ambitious and take a few more risks.
Yeah.
So I think you do raise that good point about it's hard to give very general advice.
Like, yeah.
And some people do, like some writers say, you should invest in this. And I'm never comfortable with that.
No. Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. It's very much about, it's investing is so individual that it is very hard to give general advice. I like what you picked up there. I was recently talking to ex-AFL player Ted Richards, who's now doing a lot of work in this investment space. And he was saying, yeah, one of the biggest things that you can do entering into the market at this time is just what you're saying, acknowledge your risk profile. Mm-hmm. So just understand what your appetite for risk is, but also things like your investment horizon. How long do you intend to be in the market? Because if you're 20 and you intend to be in the market for 40 years, then you can take on, you know, high levels of risk. You can take on whatever strategy you feel is right for you. Someone that invests now and has got 40 years ahead of them in the market versus someone who invests now but only wants to be in the market for the next 2 years, they're probably going to have vastly different approaches. The person that's in the market for 2 years is probably just thinking about make a little bit of a return, but really it's just about protecting the capital that they put into the market, whereas someone that's investing for 40 years can be a little bit free and say, well, if I lose a bit of money now, that's not too bad because I know that I've got that 40-year horizon ahead of me.
Yeah, exactly. So you're right. And especially people approaching retirement, it's a very difficult time for them now. Especially
it is difficult. Yeah, market crashes are definitely very hard for people that are close to retirement. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Even young people close to retirement.
Yeah. Yeah.
One final question. Do you have a frugalista tip to share?
Oh, a tip. I think that my two biggest tips or from the things that I can talk about stock market investing, passive income, I think that my biggest investing tip would just be to the obvious tip is to just get started. A lot of people want to do it but never do just because they get too scared or whatever. So mm-hmm. just take the time to maybe learn about it, look up something like dollar cost averaging and just devote a couple of hours to trying to learn about maybe stock market investing. And the other tip that I give is to just be super focused on the long term. Just if you've got the time ahead of you that you can stay in the market, just be really focused on long-term investing and try not to get caught up in the short-term kerfuffle and hype that goes on.
Yeah, there's a lot of kerfuffle and hype at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Brandon. Where can my listeners find you?
I'm on YouTube at Aussie Wealth Creation. I'm basically everywhere just at Aussie Wealth Creation. Mainly it's YouTube. YouTube channel is the thing that I work on mostly. So Aussie Wealth Creation there or over on Instagram, Aussie Wealth Creation or the Young Investors Podcast as well.
Lovely. And your business is
Profitful. Profitful.online if people want to learn more. They're just investing courses. If you want to find a way to kind of well-summarized way of helping you get started with investing, then that's the place that I'd kind of encourage listeners to go and check out.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
And please connect with me on the Joyful Frugalista Facebook group to have discussion about how you wish to start your own investing and what you think about dollar cost averaging. And I would also love you to follow my new podcast and leave a comment. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Joyful Frugalista with Serena Bird. She actually likes everybody. And of course, sound has been by Neil Hadley. And myself, I'm Joseph McGrail Baitup.
You got an accentuate the positive eliminate the negative latch on to the affirmative don't mess with Mr. In-Between.